Recording has started. Speakers, you may begin.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the PPSAI Working Group call on the 6th of October, 2015. On the call today, we have Steve Metallis, Graham Bunton, Frank Mishlick, Kathy Kleinman, Alex Deacon, Sarah Bakke, Val Sherman, James Boydell, Rudy Vasnich, Phil Corwin, Todd Williams, Susan Kawaguchi, Theo Gertz, Don Blumenthal, Amy Burns, Darcy Southwell, Chris Telling, Griffith Barnett, Vicky Sheckler, Carlton Samuels, Volker Grayman, and from staff we have Marika Konings, Mary Wong, Gisela Gruber, and myself, Chantal Dirksen. For apologies, we have Sarah Wild and Holly Raich. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Steve.
Okay, thank you, Chantal, and welcome to your first call with the PPSAI. Chantal, for those who don't know, is a new member of the ICANN staff, will be providing secretariat support to several of the GNSO groups. So we welcome her to this call and to the ICANN world. We've got a full agenda today. So let me just start by asking whether there are any updates to statements of interest that people wish to make. Okay, hearing none, let's move on to the Dublin face-to-face meeting. You've got up there a draft schedule for the meeting that we'll be having in Dublin on the 16th, a week from Friday. As you can see, let me just walk through it so you can see we've discussed among the co-chairs and the staff not only this schedule, but also what you've done to get to this point. I'm getting an echo now, though. So let's walk through this. The first substantive item will be some proposed solutions to the issues identified in parts 1 to 3 of the public comment review tool. You'll recall this was a one-page document with 7 issues that had been identified by the working group members over the past 3 months. Closer to three. It was circulated about 3 weeks ago. You should be looking within the next week for a document just annotating that and proposing ways forward on those issues. The next item is to, again, subject to change and with whatever happens in our call today, is to discuss the Sub-Team 4 report. That is on our agenda for today, so we'll see where we are at the end of that. The next is to go through work product of Sub-Team 3 on the illustrative disclosure framework dealing with Annex E, which also has had a document circulated today, and we'll be at least touching on that later today. And then there's some time for remaining issues and further. The last section is on the draft final report, and you will be getting by the end of this week a near-final, near-complete draft report from staff for review based on the discussion, based on the initial report, of course, and then the discussions that we've had since then. So that's really what we're thinking about being the focus of our discussion in Dublin. So to sum up, please keep your eyes open for 2 documents that will be circulated by the end of this week. One is the draft final report, and the other is the issues document from the public comment review tool. It's possible there will be something else circulated from subteam 3 or 4. We'll know that at the end of this session, I think. And because there will be a lot for people to go through and prepare for Dublin, the co-chair's recommendation is that we not have a call next Tuesday, and everyone can use that time to actually go through these documents and consult with your constituencies and stakeholder groups and become prepared to discuss all of these things substantively in Dublin on the 16th. Basically what we have planned for Dublin at this point. I'm happy to open the floor either to other comments from my co-chair, Graham, or from the staff, or from Don, any questions from members of the working group. Adobe room, please put up your hand, and there may be some people who are just on the bridge, and they can just speak up if they want to be recognized. Okay, hearing no questions or further comments, this is our plan for Dublin, so please prepare accordingly. Okay, the next item is a subteam 4 report. This document that's on the screen, I think, is what was sent around by the staff, I believe, on Sunday. I know we have several of the subteam members here, and I get there are some questions and comments about this that I think we'll want to go through. But let me just first ask if maybe we could turn, maybe I can give the floor to Kathy, who was the drafter of this document, and she can walk us through it and tell us what we have in front of us here in terms of the output from Subteam 4. Kathy?
Terrific. Can you hear me, Steve?
I can.
Okay, great. I just switched phones because my former phone was very staticky. I'll spare you all that. Okay, this is Subteam 4 summary and report. This is a draft. We've been working hard. There's a lot of material. People still need to review this, as Paul noted. The co-conveners of this are Paul McGrady and myself, but everyone wrote this document together. There was a lot of input. We divided up the comments and reviewed them together. So you've already seen part of this report. You saw where we went through comments. We went through about 90 substantive comments that included issues that hadn't been dealt with by the other subteams. And we divided them into categories A through G. And you've already seen the basic summary and kind of the bullet points of what we found in various comments. What's new here, and do I control this? Can somebody page? What's new here, if you can page down, is the boxes. Where we got to, what's our recommendation? And you'll see our recommendation wasn't always just one recommendation. There are various ways you can interpret what's coming in. And so I just wanted to walk through this, one by one. I'll try to go through quickly categories A through G and tell you what some of the recommendations are and also where there are various ways. Often we agree on kind of the recommendation, but not the details. So, and obviously the details belong to the working group. So Steve, I was happy to hear when you said that there's room in the agenda for Dublin to talk about some of the things coming up, because I think there'll be some important things about methodology, review, penalties that we still need to finish up in order to, tie a bow on our final report. Okay, so Subteam 1, Category A was issues involving law enforcement. And the recommendation is that the working group works on kind of an Annex E for law enforcement. Right now our Annex E is for intellectual property requests, as you know, that you review the comments. A number of expert comments came in, they seem to be well informed. And so just take those comments from our pages 1 through 7 of the template. We'll be circulating a revised, updated template with some additional comments. And, look at those. Look at what came in about law enforcement. I can answer any questions about that. Category B is methodology, periodic reviews. Now, this is interesting. So if you can page down, or Mary, if you can page down to Category B recommendations, the question is, are we communicating, will we be communicating clearly the new rules? Will people know, will customers, providers, and requesters know what the new rules are? Will we be communicating them clearly? And then, so some people suggested a short-term review soon after our implementation. That says, you know, are the FAQs out there? Are they being understood? You know, do people understand the provider rules and that they can go to the providers and find out what their disclosure and publication rules are? Is this whole process clear? That's a really good question. Another review process is later on. Are there any unintentional consequences? Should we be reviewing for unintentional consequences? And a lot of comments on this, a lot of concerns about side effects that can happen that we don't intend and that we don't want and that we haven't planned for. So, you know, a few years in, are there problems that we can then, that the accreditation process can then avoid? I think there's an agreement among the sub-team that we do need reviews. The question is how to do it. Do you do it anonymously? Do you do questioning? But I think Steve and Stephen Graham, that's for the working group. But short-term and long-term reviews are a recommendation. Go ahead.
Can I ask you there, Kathy? This is Steve. And see, Paul has his hand up, too. But
please, absolutely. How can you?
Let me just defer to Paul first, and then maybe if my question is not answered, we can come back to it. Paul, why don't you go ahead?
Sure. Just an extra thought on this particular issue, which is the primary discussion around this seems to be around data gathering. Obviously, it's not possible to survey privacy customers to find out if anything inadvertent or unexpected happened, because that's the nature of the service, right? We don't know who they are. There's no way for ICANN to know who they are. Even if they sent a survey through a privacy proxy service, through the identity of who's responding, you know, there's no way to sort of verify those sorts of things that you would normally have in survey methodology. So that's why the first option was put up there, which is to at least collect anecdotal data on a rolling basis and have outlets for that if people have issues or concerns, that ICANN could collect that information for potential review. So again, review, I guess, is the topic, but how do you collect the data practically is sort of the more complex issue. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. I guess my question is about this text in front of us and what it represents. It doesn't necessarily seem to me that there are two paragraphs here that seem to be expressing two divergent points of view. I'm not sure how divergent necessarily they are, inconsistent. And my understanding from looking at the red line that Paul circulated yesterday was that everything in the bottom half, nothing in the bottom half was in this until Sunday when it was added. So has the sub-team actually discussed these two these two alternatives, and are these alternatives, or are these actually kind of two sides of the same coin as far as review? That's my first question, maybe for Kathy and Paul.
So this is Paul. I'll just jump in here if that's okay. We have not had a lot of time to discuss these, to try to refine these ideas. I tried to send out a little note last night sort of explaining how we got here. We've tried to have a couple of calls, but with everybody's pre-Dublin schedules, it's proved difficult to get a quorum on the line. So I, from my point of view at least, and Kathy may have a different view, but from my point of view, I think that these are not two competing recommendations or two recommendations that we're trying to reconcile. I think that these are two ideas that emerged out of the comments, and they should just, from my point of view, be treated as ideas that the working group should discuss. you know, should we do one? Should we do the other? Should we do both? Should we do neither? It's essentially, from my point of view, a starting point to have a discussion about if we should have a review, and if so, how do we collect the data so that the review is meaningful?
Okay, thank you.
Can I add as well?
Yes, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, that as Paul mentioned, we haven't had another call. We had an initial call. We've been doing a lot of work by email. So here, you know, these aren't necessarily divergent, but kind of different ways of looking at different approaches. Like, I don't have the same issue with anonymity. I'm a very proud proxy privacy holder, and I can tell you, and I'll put my name on it, whether, you know, whether the FAQ that comes out later is clear or not, whether I understand what the new rules are, or better yet, I'll show it to someone, you know, who's not involved in our process and ask them. Who I know is a proxy privacy customer. But, you know, as long as you don't publish my address, phone number, and email with that, you know, I'll be fine. So, you know, this is something I hope we can discuss in Dublin, is different ways to implement methodologies and reviews. But what you're seeing here is different wording of different people in the working group, and since we didn't have time to finalize, we provided both.
Okay, thank you. And that basically comes to my next question, which is, whether what we're talking about within this box is an implementation guideline rather than a policy suggestion. It sounds as though it's different ways and perhaps divergent, perhaps not, perhaps overlapping ways of approaching implementation, review, evaluation, getting feedback on the policy once it's implemented. Is that
Steve, it's more than implementation. It's a recommendation that we, I mean, a lot of reviews don't take place. They're speculated on, they're discussed. A lot of reviews don't take place. But, for example, the URS did not provide education to registrants. It provided a lot of education to trademark owners. Here, this is a recommendation that we actually get out there and make sure that education is provided, that people understand what's happening, and that then we review it at a specific point for side effects. That's one of the recommendations we're looking at. So, again, the issue is review and when and how, and then the question of implementation would be up to the working group. Does that make sense?
Well, not exactly, because, I mean, certainly it's a recommendation, but it's I kind of read this as a recommendation for how the program should be implemented and what review processes should be built into it. But let me just flag that issue unless there are other, let's see, I see Paul has, Paul, is that an old hand or a new hand? I'm going to assume, okay, it's down, and now Vicki has her hand up. So, Vicki,
I just wanted to reiterate what Paul had mentioned earlier, that as a subteam, we have not had a chance to discuss it live. And I apologize, I've been with my father for the last week and a half, and that's been part of the problem. So, you know, even though these are stylized as recommendations, they are ideas. They are not, you know, consensus recommendations at this point. And so this is more in terms of these are the ideas that are floating. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Vicki. Any other comments on this, or can we move on to the next box? And, Kathy, maybe you can walk. This is at the bottom of page 4, I think, so maybe you can walk us through this one.
Sure. This is category C, other new or additional features that the working group should consider. And there were some interesting ideas. We made a list of 5 of them that really struck us. If you go down to the box, the bottom of page 4, we recommend that the working group consider some new features by commenters, such as requiring ICANN compliance to develop a specific framework to accept and investigate notifications of breach of accreditations involving improper reveal or publication. Number 2 would be monetary damages or penalties for abuse of the reveal disclosure process. Those who go ahead and publish the data, what's the implication there? 3, retention of data timeframes. 4, there was a request from some types of statistics. We're not going to go into whether you anonymize those statistics or how you do it, but how is the accreditation process being used? 5 is one that Subteam 3 is already working on, which is clarity of the document. There were people who said it's really hard to understand what we were talking about. So if we could make the document for ordinary readers and not those deep in the policy process, that was an interesting comment. They called our interim report a hall of mirrors. and they asked us to reduce the amount of incorporation by reference and just make it clearer. Let me stop there and see if Paul wants to add anything. Are there any questions?
Paul, do you have any comments to add on this box?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a new comment, but because I think Kathy phrased it the right way, these are, you know, a group of ideas that came out of this, out of our review of these disparate comments. And as you can see, they're all over the place, from some new as kicking around the idea of monetary damages, which obviously people on this call will have strong feelings about, all the way to something as benign sounding as bringing in an English professor to help us write the report in a way that people can understand, right? So there's quite a big divergence of ideas here. Again, because of the time frames and everybody's schedules, we've not had a chance to sit down and really talk through these issues, so they should be considered raw ideas. Again, they did exist in the comments, and so we brought them forward in the summary.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Vicki, is that a new hand?
No, sorry.
Okay. Mary has her hand up. Mary, go ahead.
Yes. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kathy, Paul, and the sub-team. So this is just to, I think, reiterate a point that was made a bit earlier. Of course, as everyone's noted, this is a set of discussion issues, not necessarily final recommendations, but just looking at it from a staff or operational perspective, I think our request would be that the working group focus on making the policy recommendations, and in terms of how those might be implemented, whether that be a mandatory review or whether that be requesting compliance to develop an investigative framework, or the sort of penalties that ought to be imposed, that may be things that are more appropriately worked out in the implementation process through what will now be a mandatory implementation review team. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Mary. I think that issue runs throughout this document. Paul, is that a new hand? Okay, presumably not. So, thank you. So,
Steve, I'm sorry. I'm such a bad housekeeper. I'll try to do better in lowering that thing.
Okay, no problem. I agree with what's been said. And just would point, I mean, some of this, as I'm reading, going through this, a lot of it is seems to be in the nature of brainstorming, which is fine. And I think that may be what some of the comments suggest, but a lot of these are, you know, would be extremely ambitious, let's put it that way, for this working group to do, such as monetary damages or coming up with a retention period for each country, or which I think is what number three suggests. So anyway, I'll just note that and see if there are any other comments on this box from category C. And if not, I will just ask Kathy if she can walk us through the next box, category D, which is on page 6.
Sure. Although, Steve, some of these recommendations, the ones that we were just looking at, have actually gone through several rounds of edits. They're not just brainstorming. There is a request from people to put teeth into it, from a number of commenters, to put teeth into the process. If somebody reveals data, what's the penalty for that? That's a request for the working group. Our sub-team is different because we're dealing with such a range. Sub-team 4 can't develop specific recommendations, but we can say, and, you know, we do need to go back and have another meeting. People couldn't make a call. But we can say this is something for the working group to flag and discuss. And so I think here we should be looking, whether you call it monetary damages, what are the teeth? What's the penalty for someone who takes a blogger's name, a dissident's name, and puts it in a public database, or harvest this data? I don't think that's just an implementation detail. So I'd love to flag some of this as let's talk in Dublin what comes out of sub-team 4 that should have recommendations, policy recommendations, and implementation recommendations. I think there is some work coming out of here that we really should be discussing in Dublin. Thanks. Category D is possible unintended consequences of disclosure for registrants, requesters, providers. And in the recommendations, if Stephanie's on the call, I'll let her talk. It might be appropriate for her to talk about identifying cases of asylum where the content of the website is largely political or religious and there's a claim of special protection and imminent harm. So, Stephanie, if you then want to comment on that, please raise your hand. There's also there's still a question of definition, whether the use of counsel, Paul, you should probably talk about this, whether counsel can act for a domain name registrant, whether counsel is included in our definitions involved in the accreditation process. And again, another, it's coming up in this set of questions as well for unintended consequences. How do we put in mechanisms later? First, do we want a recommendation, and then do we want implementation that will catch unintended consequences quickly and try to create policies that prevent them in some way rather than waiting for 10 years until the review of the policy? I'll stop there. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. I see Mary's hand is up and Vicky, so let's start with that. Anybody else, please put up your hand if you want to be in the queue. Mary.
Thanks, Steve. And actually, excuse me, my comment actually was a short one, hopefully related to the earlier points, and it's about the issue, for example, of say, what happens with when there's sort of unwarranted publication penalties, whether there should be a disclosure framework for law enforcement. It may be helpful, going back to Kathy's point about possible follow-up discussion in Dublin, to note that these issues were also considered to some extent by Subteam 1 and the working group in its discussion. So maybe in circling back to that, that could be helpful. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. And, yeah, and of course, a lot of these questions have also, in one form or another, have also been discussed in Subteam 3. So we'll that's at least an example of it. So I see Vicky, Paul, and Stephanie. So, Vicky, please go ahead.
I think Mary beat me to the punch. And, you know, I apologize to Paul. I know that he'd asked early on about whether any of these issues were really new issues that were raised, and I did not get a chance to respond to that, Paul. I apologize. But as Mary mentioned, In reviewing the documents for the other subteams, I think that some of these issues, in fact, several of them, have been addressed in some extent or another in some of the other subteam group, and we'll need to keep that in mind as we move forward.
Okay, thank you. Paul, go ahead.
So two things, one sort of procedural and then one substantive. The first procedural one is, it really, really would be helpful if we could have somebody from each of those teams identify the issues that they believe that we've listed here that have already been addressed by those other teams and what those outcomes were, so that we can perhaps remove them from the summary. There's a lot of stuff on here, and the more narrow we can make our list of issues to focus on, the better the outcomes will be from the next call or whatever the next step is for Subteam 4. And, you know, I appreciate that everybody's busy, but at the same time, it's a little frustrating to spend time on topics, you know, and then only to realize that we've sort of wasted time on it because they've already been addressed. So this is not just for the, you know, not just for the handful, but for the call. If you guys could help us with that, that would be terrific. And then secondly, one of the issues that Kathy just raised in this box is the issue of whether or not the accreditation standards will apply to attorneys. I think that there was some discussion of this early on before the initial report went out for review. We never really reached a conclusion on that point. I think that it is an important point. As you can imagine, from my point of view, the issue has to do with the nature of the relationship between the attorney and the client versus proxy service and their customer. The attorney acts as an agent for the client. There are special duties that are involved in that relationship. There is a regulatory framework within which to complain about an attorney's behavior. It's a completely different setup than a privacy proxy service, which is a contractual relationship, and there's a customer relationship there, and the duties between the two are limited to the scope of the contract. So from that aspect, I think that we need to focus on how we deal with the attorney issue for a couple reasons. One, I think that if we say to attorneys, you now have to be accredited by ICANN, and you may be forced to give up confidential information of your client, that will result in us hearing from every state bar association, every Supreme Court, every trade association for lawyers, you name it. There will be great resistance to that idea. Secondly, it doesn't deal with the reality that attorneys are agents for their clients as opposed to providing a very, very discreet service. If an attorney has a client who they are appearing in the WHOIS record instead of, and that underlying client is using the domain name for a nefarious purpose, that attorney has a problem that he or she needs to solve. And so, the relationships are different, and I think we have to be aware of that fact. And then lastly, there's the important issue of the right to counsel, which has been in existence for hundreds of years now. It is considered to be a fairly fundamental human right. And there are all kinds of situations that, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to think of situations where somebody needs to have the protection of acting anonymously on the internet and through the attorney assisting them with that, and having the special protections that in the the disclosure will only come after a lengthy process involving unpacking the relationship between the attorney and the client. So those are some of the issues that came up here. I'm not doing a really good job describing it. I apologize for that. But it really boils down to the fact that the attorneys act as agents for their clients as opposed to a more discreet customer relationship. I'm hoping that we can find a way to make it clear in our final report that we do not intend for these accreditation standards to apply to attorney-client relationships, just so that we can take the issue out of the debate. So thanks for letting me ramble a bit, and I'd be happy to answer any questions on that.
Thank you, Paul. Let me just, before we continue with the queue, let me just note that this is an issue that was flagged in the public comment review tool, and as I mentioned, you will be getting some recommendations or suggestions on ways forward on those prior to the Dublin meeting, so perhaps that will help to contribute here. I see Stephanie and then Volker, so Stephanie, please go ahead.
Yes, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, I hope you can hear me. I'm responding to Kathy's invitation to discuss this issue of asylum. And just to note, of course, that we do, even though the numbers of cases that privacy proxy service providers receive that fall into this particular category are undoubtedly much smaller than trademark cases, they're nevertheless very problematic, and we got quite a few comments about people who would be at risk for several reasons. We heard from basically the Gamergate folks about being tracked down by people who wish to harass them online. Personally, and I bored the EWG with this at some length when I was on that committee, but When we assign new identities and social insurance numbers to people in government, the experience was we thought we would be getting domestic violence cases. In fact, we got a great many people who were fleeing religious sects. And there just is no end to the creativity that people pursuing escapees, as it were, either from marriage or religious sex, will go to game the system. So given that we haven't really solved this the issue of how do we sanction the occasional bad actor with monetary penalties, et cetera, I think we have to be very careful about acceding to these requests and providing the identity of the individual. Something that I know we've gone over it and over it and over it, but it bears going over again. Once you release the personal information, it's out there. And in particular, if it's in the who is, it's gone forever because of the value-added services, which we, of course, haven't discussed in this group, but they are reality. Thanks. I think that's all I want to say on that matter. And I'll save what I have to say about litigation privilege, not litigation privilege, but special categories for lawyers for later. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. Volker, please go ahead.
Thank you, Steve. I think we may run a risk of creating a very big loophole if we create two sets of rules, one for lawyers that are providing the exact same service that a non-lawyer who has privacy service would be providing. It would be an invitation to the Saul Goodman of the world to provide the exact same service that any whose privacy service is providing with a added level of water tightness, and we could have saved ourselves a lot of time if we just had looked at what lawyers can agree to, what system would be appreciated, would be applicable to lawyers, and then apply that to all privacy service providers alike, because if the service is the same, then the rules governing the service should be the same as well. I have a very big problem in creating two services, because that way we will just be creating two worlds and a very big loophole that will bite us in the behind at some point.
Thank you, Volker. I see Todd, Paul, and Vicky, and I'd like to cut off the queue there because we do have a few more items to walk through in this sub-team four report. So, Todd, please go ahead.
Thanks, Steve. Todd Williams for the transcript. And my point was actually back to the asylum discussion that we were having. And just to flag for the working group's consideration that sub-team three tried to grapple with similar issues, and where we landed is in what you now see as 3C5 and 3C6. And I just wanted to flag that when we get to looking at that as a potential template. Again, you know, ours is only limited to intellectual property requests, but to the extent that the working group likes that and thinks that it could be applicable beyond those, that's a possible solution to the issue that we're talking about. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Todd, for bringing in that this is being looked at in a narrower context in other subgroups. I've got Paul and then Vicky. Paul, go ahead.
Thank you. Paul McGrady for the record. This is just in response to Volker's comment that privacy proxy services are performing legal services. I don't think that they are. At least I hope not. Obviously, what the attorney does is very different from what privacy proxy services do, so they can't be characterized as the exact same service. And I've already gone over the difference between the two regulatory frameworks and the rights and duties. So I'd like to point out that, yes, if privacy proxy services were performing legal services and that was actually a legal thing to do, an allowable thing to do, then maybe we would be dealing with the same accreditation standards. But so long as privacy proxy services are performing privacy proxy services and not legal services, I don't think we can conflate the two, and we shouldn't make that mistake early on as we're looking at this issue. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Vicky, go ahead.
I think it was just to reiterate Todd and Paul's point, you know, on the asylum issue. There is something addressing that in Annex E. In connection with equating legal services with privacy proxy services, I doubt the privacy proxy services want to take on the legal obligations that lawyers have. And, you know, we ought to keep that in mind. I'm not sure what the right answer is here, but I am certain that there are differences in the obligations in a lawyer versus a contractual privacy proxy arrangement.
Okay, thank you, Vicki. I think the challenge is really to formulate those differences in a way that there's no way to prevent gaming, but maybe to minimize it and make it clear, you know, which side of the line different types of services fall on. We did want to cut off the queue here, but Volker, if you have one more point that you need to make in 30 seconds, please do so. Okay, thank you. I'm sure this discussion will continue, and as I said, on the...
Sorry, I was on mute there. I think as it comes to legal services, then Todd has a point, but the act of providing a service of privacy of a domain name in itself is not a legal service. It can be in certain circumstances be a legal service, but the lawyers should outsource that to accredited privacy service provider. We are creating one set of rules here that supposed to apply to privacy services or anyone providing services that are hiding the domain owner from the public in the public who is. It doesn't matter who's providing that service. That's not a legal service in itself.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to page 7, the next box. Kathy, can you quickly...
I can quickly, but first maybe you could put it on 6 or somebody could tie it to page 6, which is the introduction, and then page 7 where we have category E. But before that, let me, Steve, I just wanted to preface or repeat again that we viewed, in Subteam 4, we viewed our job, as Paul said, as a little different. We're flagging issues, not solving them. We had such an array, all we can really do is flag them. So let me go down the list again of the key issues that have been flagged so far. Definitional, who's a provider? You know, this discussion should continue in Dublin, definitely. Penalties, review, timing, methodology. Review is key. Special protections, asylum. So let's kind of flag those as issues that we don't dismiss now or say whether they're policy or implementation, but hopefully discuss in Dublin. Category E, this is really quick, but it's not unimportant. A lot of people responded to our question, to the underlying question of whether we should be creating an accreditation program at all. Obviously, we got our marching orders as a working group from the council, but a lot of people chose to respond, and so we summarized it. And it should definitely, you know, so we kind of disagree what to do with these recommendations. We'll get back to you with more details on that. But we want to flag that there's still a lot of controversy about this program. And my personal opinion is at least at a minimum we should reflect that in the final report, that not the world doesn't necessarily want us to move forward with this. And, you know, there's certainly disagreement out there in the real world. Let me stop for a second and see if anybody disagrees or wants to add anything.
Paul, did you have anything to, or other members of the sub-team, did you have anything to add on this? I do see that this is a box that changed totally at the last stage from the red line Paul circulated. And obviously, these implementation and post-implementation review issues are very important. How best to reflect those. Vicki and Paul, and then quickly, and then we can move on to the next section.
I would just point out that I disagree with Kathy's assertion that the world thinks this shouldn't move forward. Were there some comments that were critical? Absolutely. But let's keep it, you know, in the general framework of what's actually happening. Thank you.
Thanks, Vicki. Paul?
Hi, Paul McGrady for the record. I think all this comment does is, again, highlight this recurring discussion that's been going on since day one, which is, you know, should we be doing this? I don't know that we can provide details on what these comments said, and if there were particular, you know, new ideas, maybe we can fish them out but for the working group. But I think that there is, essentially that issue needs to be settled once and for all, but I think it's at the working group level. I don't think that's something that the team could possibly do.
Thanks. Let's unless there's other comments there, let's move on to the bottom of page 7, category F, due process concerns. Kathy, do you want to kick this off?
Sure. Okay, category F, additional due process concerns not already covered by other sub-teams. And this, again, goes back to privacy issues, law enforcement requests. Extraterritoriality was one we got comments on. Again, the question of if something is criminal or illegal in one country and it's not in, say, the country of the provider or the registrant, what's the reveal requirement? We have discussed this, but it was interesting to see these comments coming in from outside, and there's no other sub-team that was dealing with it. So our interim recommendation or interim conclusion is that many of these due process comments appear to fit into other categories as well, so we've probably been dealing with them under other titles. And that we really, that looking through kind of due process as a whole should be one of, part of the final report. We'll see that as a final conclusion, too, because some people put their comments under one category, others under another. So we're seeing kind of similar themes in the next two categories. The other is that we really should sit down and talk about what law. We've talked about this a lot, but in the final report, there's some call to talk about what law is deemed to apply to the request, the law of the proxy privacy customer's location, the law of the provider's location, the law of the requester, the aggrieved party. There is a call for us to make some statements about that. So let me pause there, and then Category G should be fast.
Thank you. Thank you, Kathy. Are there any comments on this from other members of the working group? Excuse me, of the sub-team first. And then, or of the full working group. My only comment on this is that I don't know that it's within the competence of the working group to decide what law applies here. These are legal questions that, if there were a dispute, then the tribunal would have to make that decision, I guess. But I'm not sure exactly how this would be carried out. But maybe that's just my misunderstanding of this. Paul has his hand up. Paul, please go ahead.
I think that Steve was essentially going to say what you said, which is, this is a fairly complex issue, and I don't want to speak for the providers who might be on the line, but I suspect that they have a particular point of view on this issue. We have heard time to time, I don't know if McKaylee's on today or not, but he would say things like, well, if it's not coming from an Irish court or an Irish law enforcement agency, I'm not going to respond to it. That's something that I guess if we got to figure out whether or not we're capable of settling that issue or if that's something that will work itself out, like you said, in the courts. But in any event, this is an ambitious topic, but I think worthy of kicking around a bit.
Okay, thank you, Paul. I see Volker has his hand up. Volker, go ahead. Volker, are you with us?
No, what's that mute again? Sorry for that. I think I'm just responding to Paul's comment there. McKinley and most providers would not look at the complaints which came from a law enforcement official from a different jurisdiction. They would just not treat them the same way they would treat law enforcement requests coming from their jurisdiction. There would still be a certain amount of due diligence that any provider would have to face and determine their reactions by. According to their terms of service. It's just that most providers will likely treat a law enforcement complaint from a different jurisdiction just like a normal complaint from any jurisdiction.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to the last box, which is on page 8. Kathy, do you want to – category G is other topics. So
sure. Take a second. Okay, so this is all on page 8. Category G is other specific topics within the working group scope not captured by the above categories. And we have both the bullet points of what some of the comments said as well as the recommendation or the interim recommendation. What you're going to see here was that it was some duplication because we had, you know, we had 5 people reviewing comments. So you're going to see some duplication. There was nothing that said that a comment had to fall into only one category. So we've got issues like clarity, damages coming back again, standards, verifiable evidence of wrongdoing. So as a sub-team, we have an interim recommendation that there should be a public-facing FAQ or other document designed to make our conclusions readable to the average person and understandable so they know what's happening to eliminate confusion. That, again, we review and assess the final, consider review and assessing the final report to make sure that this massive call for due process that we receive is really incorporated at every stage of our processes being created. There's also a call to consider concerns raised about the petitions as well, about some of the massive calls that came in. Vicki might want to speak to that line, or Paul. And that wraps up Sub-Team 4's report. Thanks, Kathy. Or at least my part of it.
Thank you, Kathy. Does anybody else have comments on this last box? We are running short on time, but if people have something they need to say here. Okay, let me thank the sub-team members for this, for all the work and for the detailed report. I see 2 action items coming out of this. One is, as we mentioned, maybe we can ask the staff to, in particular, go to the co-conveners of each of the other sub-teams and ask them to take a look at this document and flag any issues that they feel they've addressed or that were addressed in their reports. And at least possibly that would help winnow the long list of issues here. So that would be one request I'd make of staff. Second, I guess I'd ask the sub-team whether you think this will be, we will have something more refined, another iteration of this prior to Dublin. I would strongly recommend that if we can, because as was said, this is an issue flagging document. And we need to move as quickly as possible to the problem solutions phase here of whatever needs to be addressed in our final report. So, can I ask Paul and Kathy if you can at least try to get a refined version of this document out to the list before Dublin, because that would certainly facilitate having a good discussion in Dublin on the sub-team 4 issues. So let me just close with that request to the sub-team conveners. We have only a few minutes left, but I do want to put up on the screen the output from sub-team 3. And I'm going to we're not going to really have a chance to go through all of this, but let me ask Todd or others from the sub-team to at least let us know what we have here that was circulated, I believe, on Sunday, on the weekend. And I'm going to ask people to take a close look at this over the next few days, again, to help us focus our discussion in Dublin. Todd, please go ahead briefly.
Thanks, Steve. I'll go fast. And Kathy, if you want to jump in on any of this, because a lot of these stemmed from comments that you had made in our call last week. But basically, what you see the changes in the beginning are to the point that we just heard from Sub-Team 4 about readability and ease of understanding. Another big issue to flag, 1B3 being put back in, minus the word standardized, but otherwise intact. Changes to 2A, 6B, which then are repeated in 2B and 2C. Basically, this goes back to what was included in the initial report, but with the inclusion of comply with all applicable data protection laws while retaining customers' contact details in essentially the preamble sentence for each of those 3 sections.
And that's on page 3 of this document, if people are...
Yes, and then it's repeated again on page 4. And 6. And then in section 3, changes to 3B, changes specifically to 3B1. We've got the inclusion of secure communication channels. Changes on 3C2 and 3, changes on 3C4, specifically on whether surrender is optional or mandatory or allowed to allow, which I think is a new formulation. And then keeping 3C6.
Sorry. On page 7 again, if we can, people can follow through this. Go ahead.
No, thank you. I was just trying to go quickly. And then 3C6 as its own section rather than being collapsed into 3C5. This is at the bottom of page 7, and this gets to the asylum point that we were talking about before. And I think that is it, other than inclusion of kind of both options in Annex 1 for further discussion, which again gets to the point that we were talking about before from Subteam 4 on what to do to address request or misuse. So that's very quick.
Thank you, Todd. We appreciate that very, very brief summary. Does anybody else have a comment on this briefly? I see Volker's hand is up. Volker, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Steve. Just following up on my comments that I made in the chat earlier, I think one point that is missing clearly here, or missing should be made more clear in there, is that if the requester has not fulfilled the proof, i.e. provided all the information to the satisfaction of the provider, then it should also be the provider should also be able to refuse. I think we have different case here. This not meeting the burden of proof is missing.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Volker. So 3C is, I think it was intended to be, if you've met all the requirements in 2, then these are the different actions that could be the basis for refusal. But I think you're raising that if you didn't meet everything in 2, then that could also be a basis for refusal. So that may need to be clarified. All right, I'm just going to ask Todd, do you have something very brief on this?
No, that's fine. I was just going to say the language in 3C 2 and 3 is meant to mirror what is in 2, meaning if you, the requester, have not met the requirements of 2, that's a basis for not disclosing. I guess we can make that point clear, but that's certainly what those intentions or what those sections are intended to do.
Let me ask Todd and Volker to see if they can resolve this offline if there's any further changes needed. Let me ask everybody to take a close look at this over the next few days, and please come to the list with any issues that you think we need to discuss on this in Dublin. I think we've moved along on this. We have a very concrete document here, and we just need to figure out what are the areas that still need to be hammered out. So anything you can provide on the list over the next, say, by the end of this week, on this document on Subteam 3 would be very, very valuable. So please do give us your input on that. We are at the top of the hour, and I want to thank everybody for their contributions. You will be seeing material on the list over the next week, as I mentioned, the near final, near complete report, and the material on gleaned from the public comment tool, and we may hopefully see something further on Subteam 4 as well. So please watch for all those. We will not be speaking again until we convene in Dublin on Friday, the 16th. So safe travels to all who will be traveling, but please watch the list and respond as fully as you can between now and then. With that, we'll adjourn this meeting. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much. Have a great travel.